www.thebrainpickings.com.
Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland.
It is, and I'm Art Bell.
Hi, everybody. It is Sunday once again, and here we are, as scheduled. I would like to acknowledge an award given in Phoenix for the best radio talk show. This is it, Dreamland. It's a great honor, thank you. It's in the paper down there, was in the paper, and it's a great honor. And I'm sure KFYI is honored to be carrying it. Have it so awarded. Thank you. As a matter of fact, adding to the Dreamland affiliates this week, WSPCAM in Albemarle, North Carolina. Hello there in North Carolina. WFNTAM in Flint, Michigan. Now there's a good place to be, Flint, Michigan. Glad to have you on board. KYLRAM in Huntsville, Texas. Welcome to the network, and KSYG in Little Rock, Arkansas. Good to have you on board. Rounding out the number of affiliates now carrying Dreamland to a nice, tasty, even 150. So you can tell at the rate at which it is growing, along with the other syndicated show now at 217 affiliates. It's going nuts out there, folks. As usual, Linda Moulton Howe, considered to be the world's expert on crop circles and animal mutilations, will be back into her field, I understand, with a report this evening. And then off into the world of nano dreams, the story of nanotechnology, with Elton Elliott. Elton has done a very great deal of work, has written a number of books, and I think you're going to find it absolutely fascinating. I know I do. So, nanotechnology in your immediate future. But first, of course, Linda Howe. Let me begin, though, by taking care of this. It is a pleasure, and it's kind of right down the alley of Dreamland in a lot of ways, because it sounds high-tech, it sounds unbelievable, but it is true. GMX magnetic water conditioning works. I'm telling you it works. I use it here. Welcome to the program, Linda.
Well, hi, Art, and hi. Welcome to more new stations. I'm glad to hear Dreamland is expanding and glad to hear the accolade in Arizona.
Yeah, isn't that something? Best talk show award, and I believe that it was the first time that award was ever given to an outside show or a syndicated program, so we're pretty proud of it.
Well, it's great, and you know, last week on Dreamland, as we keep trying to stay at the edge of stories that are breaking on several fronts, ranging from
this hour of Art Bell was recorded for rebroadcast at this time. Please do not call.
And the paranormal to the whole huge complex UFO phenomena, which now is featuring the possibility that we're actually being introduced to other life forms through autopsies that the government has hidden.
And I know you're going to head away from this topic quickly because you've got something else, but before we leave the subject of the autopsy, we were talking, and I think we ought to share this with the audience. I've had various faxes saying, well, you know, this didn't look right or that didn't look right, but Linda, so far, and I have a big information base and so do you, not one person has shot a big hole into the alien autopsy film as seen thus far. Not one big hole.
Right, and since I interviewed London music video producer Ray Santilli for Dreamland last week about the alleged Socorro, New Mexico UFO crash and retrieval of humanoid bodies, both dead and alive, on a date of June 3rd, 1947, completely different from the July 1947 Roswell crash, I've received off-the-record communications from three people who say the autopsy film is real. One communicator said that in his work for the government that he had read classified government documents about both Corona, New Mexico, and a completely different flying saucer crash, flying saucer being the term used in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
located between Socorro and Magdalena, which is where the cameraman associated with the Ray Santilli film says he photographed both three live aliens and a dead one and a silver disc. This contact said that he has actually seen film from the Corona, New Mexico crash site on the Mac Bragel Ranch and emphasized that the non-human beings there were quite different than the Socorro humanoids. He said the Corona crash site beings had very large heads with eyes like a cat or reptile, meaning vertical slit pupils, and that the hands had four long fingers, not six fingers, as the humanoids have in the Socorro autopsies. So each week, Art, more circumstantial information piles up to support reports that there have been several different UFO crash sites and retrievals since the 1940s.
Well, maybe it's breaking it all open.
Yeah, maybe we are at that time, finally. And as Ray Santilli said in the interview, he's been receiving information about other films and photos which might be forthcoming in the months ahead, and I'm going to try to stay on top of these events as they unfold. And while we've all been absorbed with the humanoid autopsy footage and the controversy about whether or not these are real extraterrestrials from off planet somewhere, right around us people are reporting encounters with live entities that don't seem to be human either. And some of the current eyewitness accounts also involve the animal mutilation mystery. Recently, I interviewed a Canadian farmer who has lost a dozen cattle since January, and even more in 1994 after he saw a strange glowing object in his Saskatchewan pasture last March. It was about midnight, and he was checking cows about to calve. This is his story.
All the way from Canada.
I walked out there and checked my cows and got to the end of the trail, and then I heard something like a tractor, like a machine running, say about a half a mile away or a mile away, just a hum, eh? And I got looking around and I spotted this thing down there in the field.
What did you see?
It was about a quarter of a mile away. It was kind of greenish, looked like in a saucer shape, and it was... it looked like it was sitting maybe about 2 feet off the ground, eh? Like it wasn't really embedded right into the grass and debris down there. It was just kind of maybe lifted up about 3 feet off the ground, something like that. And I just stared at it, and of course the hair in the back of your neck kind of stands up. And it gives you a funny feeling, and I had a flashlight. I never even lit the flashlight because I thought, well, I didn't want to be seen. I just wanted to watch. And then I made some kind of a remark like, what in the hell do you bastards want or something like that from me, eh? You know, I said, real loud, eh? And I just watched it, and I seen two little figures come around on each side of it, like, you know, from the glare from it, from the machine, you could see these two figures in front. It was, you know, like it was dark, eh?
What did they look like?
Oh, I don't know. They're about... I'd say maybe 2.5-3 feet tall or something like that, and they look something like a half dinosaur and half man or something. Like they kind of had long skinny bodies and longer heads on them, eh?
Okay, so something that was sort of lizard-like or reptilian-looking?
Yeah, something like that. I can recall them. I didn't see no long tails on them or anything, but you know, they were just... And they kind of just scurried around in front there for half a second and made themselves more or less visible to me. And all of a sudden the thing took off, eh? I can't remember if I talked it before I seen them, or I think I seen them first before I said, what the hell do you guys want from me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing just lifted up, kind of went into a light, like changed into a light color, like, you know, kind of an orangish yellow color.
So it went from green to orangish yellow.
Yeah. And it just hovered above the trees there and just more or less fit in like a, not like a star, but you know, like it was, you could tell it was different. It was just above the tree line, and I walked to the house here. And I woke up the family and said, look, you guys, see that light over there? I said, it was just on the ground over there. And I said, it was green. I said, no, it's bright yellow. And we watched it for a few minutes, and finally it started to move a little bit. We went to bed.
After that, did you have any animal mutilations that spring?
Yeah, in fact, I think we did down in another pasture. We had the kids and the wife went down, checked the cows, and they said there was a calf there with the ears cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Flush with the head.
And that was what month?
That was in 94 of the summer, I guess.
Okay, so not maybe a month or two after the sighting?
Oh, probably 2-3 months after. Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. The calf had the ears cut off.
Okay.
When they went and seen it, like, and they come home and told me, and I said, the next day, I said, well, let's go look. I said, you know, it's awful odd. 1 or 2 days later. And then we couldn't find
the calf at all?
Couldn't find the calf at all, and we found the cow, yeah, and she was dead, eh? She had been mutilated back, and then the face was done pretty good on her.
And that was the mother of the calf that had disappeared?
Yes.
And on the head, what was taken from the cow, the mother cow?
Oh, the tongue and the jaw, like all the meat back on the jaw and the back end of her.
How long have you been ranching and farming in this same farm area?
Since about 1970 or 71.
Okay, so at least 25 years in the same farm.
Yeah.
And over those 25 years, how many animals have you lost to this unusual death with excisions of tissue?
Oh, we've got to be in the 20s somewhere. The nearest we can figure, it's been probably about, well, we've had 12 this year. So I'd say probably near 20, 24, somewhere in that area over the years.
All right, and what's been the average value on the animals that you've lost this year? How many dollars per animal?
Oh, probably around the $800 mark or something.
So,
commercial cows, eh?
Right.
They're not purebreds or nothing, but it does hurt.
Yeah, that's about $9,600 or almost $10,000 in animals.
In this summer, yeah.
Now, are you able to get any insurance money on these animals?
Well, Linda, the problem we have here is the insurance policy reads, if it's mutilated, they'll pay. But we can't find anybody that wants to come out and tell us they're mutilated, even though they can see it.
And what is it, in terms of your own mind, as you look at these 12 animals this year and the others in the past, that makes them different from predator kills?
What's the difference?
Yeah, from your point of view.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. Like a predator will pull. These are real nice. These are cut so nice and carved away with a knife. For instance, like even after a few days, the hooves on the cows, you know, they'll pull right off like they've been, you know, like this, the same as if there's any horns on them. Mine never had no horns now, but 2 years ago I had one with horns. You could grab that horn and pull it right off and all you had left was just the meaty part of the horn inside.
Right.
Now this kind of rigor mortis, it takes time, like 2 or 3 years on a normal basis, eh? Like, you know, you can butcher a bull, you can kill a bull, take the head, and you'll never pull the horns off. It can hang there for years, you know what I mean?
Right.
And whereas these here, you can grab and just pull the horn right off. There's some form of energy that's exerted on these animals. And this is where our problem is coming in. If these guys would acknowledge it, that it's not predators,
you could get insurance.
Yes. You know, we'd get something out of it. Like, we don't know what we're going to do. Like, are we going to sell the cow herd? Are we going to have to move on? Something else? Because, I mean, the crop is, there's no crop up here this year. So we're pretty well financially strapped right now.
And this farmer, he doesn't want to have his name known.
I don't blame him a bit.
Yeah, and I've talked with so many in the same situation. But he said to me, you know, maybe by at least sharing what's happened to me, that some other farmers will feel like that they can also come forward, and maybe if we all started talking about what's happening, we might be able to change things. At least I'm hoping that by being able to share these reports, like this from this Canadian farmer, that we can help other people feel more confident about reporting such things as animal mutilations or unusual deaths and possible associations with lice?
Well, I can just see sitting down with an insurance adjuster explaining about the disc and the little reptilian half-human beings or whatever he saw. No, thank you. That's not going to work. So you're right. It's the only hope.
Yeah, and if anyone in Montana, North Dakota, the Great Lakes, or other areas along the U.S.-Canadian border who hear Dreamland have had any similar incidents occur on their ranches or farms or know anyone who has, I would really appreciate them contacting me, if possible, by mail at Post Office Box 538 in Huntingdon Valley, Pennsylvania, and the zip code is 19006. Again, that's Post Office Box 538 in Huntingdon Valley, Pennsylvania, zip code 19006. And Art, for information about books and videos now, I have a toll-free 800 number, and that is 800-707-9993. Again, that's 800-707-9993 for information about books and videos.
All right, one more number, then we've got to go. Do you want to give out your fax number?
Yeah, thanks. It's area code 215-491-9842. And I will look forward for information.
Linda, we got interrupted there at the end. Give it again, please.
215-491-9842.
Yeah, we're getting interrupted. I think you're getting a call.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, we'll get it on again before the end of the program. Linda.
So I'm interested in information on all fronts, from the human rights to mutilations, crop circles, abductions, all of the mystery.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Linda Howe. Look forward to talking to you next week again, I suppose. I hope Philadelphia.
Yes, I will be here.
All right, talk to you then. 9842.
This hour of Art Bell was recorded for rebroadcast at this time. Please do not call.
From the Kingdom of Nine, you're hearing Dreamland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222, or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Oh, it certainly is, and the east of the Rockies line is the only one they're not given. It is 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. Now, 09. Now I'm going to read you the back of Nano Dreams. This is Elton's book. Listen to this and let your hair stand on end. Nano Dreams. Welcome to the world of the micro-miniaturized future where all things are possible. But only human wisdom stands between us and unspeakable disaster. Nano Dreams. Virus-sized self that can fabricate a spaceship from seawater, eliminate disease, reverse aging, and increase human intelligence. But devices that can create anything from anything and are too small to detect are of necessity, of course, a two-edged sword. So in your future, imagine nano nightmares. Microscopic assassins that self-replicate like a plague as they skip from body to body, searching for that one special victim or racial type. Devices that are physically invade high security computers and hack them into little data bits. Nanomachines that go anywhere, do anything, and have no mercy. Pretty chilling stuff, huh? Elton Elliott, He is a graduate of Willamette University class of 1980, lives in Kaiser, Oregon, with an ever-expanding family of computers. He is many, many times published. His stories have been nominated for the Nebula Award. Dr. Gregory Benford, in the science column of in the May 1995 issue of the magazine of fantasy and science fiction, called his anthology Nano Dreams a good example of firm thinking. We'll find out what he's published as we go to him now. From where is this in Oregon? Give us the name of your city again. I may have slaughtered it, Elton. Where are you?
Kaiser.
Kaiser, okay. Well, I got it all right.
Kaiser, yep.
Good to have you on the program.
Good to be speaking with you this evening. I wanted to congratulate you first on your award.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And I have many, many times driving long distances late at night, I have listened to your show.
Yes, the keeper of the night, I guess we are.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's kept me from falling asleep, so.
That's done that for me, too. So far, anyway. All right. I thought the back of your book did a good job of explaining what it can be on the plus side and what it can be on the negative side. So why don't you go ahead and sort of lay this out or expand on what is on the back of your book here. What is nanotechnology for those who are new to it? I guess we better begin at the beginning.
I will begin at the beginning, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a direct quote from an author by the name of Eric Drexler, and he's not just an author, he's also a scientist.
All right.
Was awarded the world's first PhD, as a matter of fact, in nanotechnology from MIT. And he is the person who coined the term nanotechnology. He also writes the introduction to Nanodreams. And his definition, in his groundbreaking book, Engines of Creation, his definition, technology based on the manipulation of individual atoms and molecules to build structures to complex atomic specifications. And how I would describe that for lay people in the audience would be as follows. Up until now, our technology has essentially been bulk technology. To create the telephone that I'm talking to you on, we take various types of plastics, various types of metals, other things. We heat them, we chop them, we combine them together, and we create objects of use. Telephones, VCRs, televisions, what have you.
Sure.
Our houses, our clothes, everything is done via bulk technology. We take something large and we chip away at it.
Mm-hmm.
Nature doesn't operate that way. We ourselves are born from a program. And when can we expect it back on the radio?
Soon. And what he's up to is correlating data on Hale-Bopp, the comet. And, of course, we're going to talk to him as well about a whole bunch of other things, including these new photographs we've got, and the photographs, and the alien autopsy. So there's a lot for Mr. Hoagland to comment on, and the answer is soon.
Fantastic. Another quick question. Is there a way to monitor what he's doing over the Internet? I found some articles that have been...
You might try a web browse search on the name Hoagland, Richard Hoagland, see what
okay.
You can find. That's all I can suggest.
Okay. One quick question, I'll let you go.
Yes, sir.
Do you understand hyperdimensional physics?
Only vaguely. I've had Richard explain it to me a number of times, and I can't tell you that I fully grasped it. I've got sort of an outline of an idea of what he's talking about, but fully... No.
Yeah, the last time you had him on the air, he spent a lot of time discussing his problems that he's having with our government and trying to get information and trying to get things done, but he didn't spend a whole lot of time discussing hyperdimensional physics, and I was just hoping that next time he would.
Well, we'll see what we can do, whether he can bring it down to... It's very difficult to bring it down, a very complex subject, to the level that a relative layman can understand. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art. I was wondering when Mr. Shells, you said you're going to get him back on the air to interview him again after you talked to the photographer.
That is correct, yes.
Is he going to do a recording of his interview audio and possibly let you play it back on the air for us? Or is he just going to relay the information?
Oh, no. We'll have him on as a guest.
Sir?
We will have him on as a guest.
No, as far as the audio part of his interview with the photographer.
Oh, that I can't answer. It depends on what he gets, sir. I have no way of knowing. He will talk to the photographer and either give us secondhand or give us access to the photographer or give us a recorded interview from the photographer, and I have no way of knowing what he's going to do.
These pictures you say you received from this anonymous contributor, does the pictures by chance show the part that Mr. Shell was talking about that was in these other films, the portion that shows the communication receiver?
Yes, sir. Are you referring to the box?
Box?
Yeah, the box with the imprint for the control panel with using six fingers.
No, he mentioned that there was like a communication satellite or something that was separate from the ship that was supposed to be attached to the ship that was...
Yeah, no, I have nothing of that sort. What I have is what I described, sir. I have photographs of the wreckage.
Oh,
uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes, indeed. All right, thank you very much for the call. And again, because this is so fresh and so immediate, I want to take a second out to tell you, as soon as I'm off the air, and I'm about to be off the air, I'm going to quickly arrange to send these photographs to the bulletin board and John Byron. He is going to get them up there immediately for you. My guess is... this process will take about 30 minutes. The phone number for our bulletin board, and you can begin calling about 30 minutes from now, is 702-727-1709, if you have a computer. Now, if you would like to subscribe to our newsletter or get a copy of the incredible, incredible Bob Shell interview, you can call right now, 1-800-917-4278. As you say, from bulk to get something smaller and functional, a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Nanotechnology starts at the bottom, at the molecular level.
And builds up.
And builds up. Kind of like, like nature.
Exactly. Nanotechnology may not be, we may not do it exactly the way that nature does it, but we know that molecular technology, which is really what this is, another term for it, molecular nanotechnology, we know that it works because nature already does it. That's a key factor. And that's one of the things that a lot of people miss when they first hear about this technology. So therefore, once you get accustomed to the notion of shall we say, operating from a program. For instance, you could take, and let's talk about a house.
Right.
Our houses today are remarkably inefficient. I mean, they're nice caves, they protect us from the elements, but at tremendous cost. How about the notion of smart bricks? Okay, the notion of bricks pre-programmed, for instance, to in the summertime, in the coolness of the evening, to let the cool air in, to open their pores. In the middle of the day when it's hot, to close their pores.
Wow.
Period.
Wow, that's incredible. In other words, let me try to understand.
And I'll give credit to Dr. Arnold Andrews at Sandia National Laboratories who came up with that notion.
All right, smart bricks. Let's explore the notion for a second. Let's say we had a smart brick.
Mm-hmm.
What have we got on our hands here? Do we have a machine, or do we have some kind of living organism?
We have something. We're going to have to come up with a new term. It's not specifically a living organism. It is a little different than a machine. I would say it's the difference between hardware and software. Hardware, once again, is bulk technology, but a software program in a computer is actually, as far as I'm concerned, the first beginnings of the notion of molecular technology happened with computer software.
You're stretching my mind. Let's say with the brick. In other words, how does the brick,
okay.
How is the brick programmed or different from a normal brick, in its ability to let air through.
The brick would be designed with computers, onboard computers inside, very very tiny, very small molecular computers, that and it just basically does it to any preset temperature. And you can control this by just essentially by voice augmentation. You can just call out. Let's say, for instance, that it's a beautiful sunset and you want to see it from every area of your house. Suddenly, those smart bricks are now transparent.
Oh my. Elton, how far away from such technology do you think we might be?
Well, a saying which has been credited to a gentleman by the name of Roger Arnold, who I've never met, but I've heard it's been credited to him. He said, if we're lucky, we'll have it in 30 years. If we're unlucky, we'll have it in 10.
That's a way to put it, all right. And that of course, introduces us to the negative side of the possibility of nanotechnology. But before we go to the negative side, here's a fact. So I've got a lot of people. This is from all the way up on Kodiak Island, Alaska.
Okay.
And it's a question for you. Will nanotechnology be able to constantly repair our bodies? If so, how soon can I expect to have the body of a 20-year-old again? Oh, no, wait, there's more. Overpopulation and space travel are my concerns if this technology can indefinitely extend human life. We'll have to get off the rock, this rock, or stop having children till we can extend life. That would change everything. I just hope I live to see it. If I do, we might run into each other 1,000 years from now on some other planet and talk about old times. That's from Gary in Kodiak.
Well, Gary, you might very well be correct. We might indeed do that 1,000 years from now. It would be certainly a fond wish of mine. The way that, and you're also correct that when you have longevity, you also change from a culture, and this is crucial. You change from a culture of death, which is what our culture is today.
Mm-hmm.
The pension funds, insurance companies,
true,
they're all based on death.
True.
Nanotechnology is going to change our culture. It will be a culture based on life. And yes, indeed, one of the things they are talking about are very very small machines inside the human body, going through the human body. I don't know if these are things that are permanently in there, or if you take an occasional drink, say for instance, and put them in. But you can imagine very 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 small, tiny
machines.
Molecular machines with an onboard computer that say use the glucose in the bloodstream for an energy supply, that use a flagellum like a bacteria, mm-hmm, to motor through the body. They're very small, so the smallest capillary that you have in your body to these machines is like a 128-lane freeway.
Well, all right.
And they go through and they check for anything that shouldn't be there.
All right, again, let me back up a little bit. In other words, from the moment we are born, we are dying.
Absolutely.
Right? But nanotechnology might put us in a constant state of repair, in other words.
Exactly. It will put us in a constant state of repair. And this will change us. This is one of the key things about nanotechnology that a lot of people don't have the guts to talk about. And I'm going to talk about it tonight.
All right.
That is that nanotechnology will change human beings.
All right. On that note, hold on. We'll come right back to you. If you have not been hooked yet, then you are not hookable and should go away and listen to a music program someplace. Elton T. Elliott, back in a moment. Let's see if I've got this right. If we're lucky, we'll have nanotechnology in 30 or 40 years. If we're unlucky, we'll have it in 10 years. Now, Elton,
yes?
Is it ahead of us? And if it is, how dangerous is it?
I would maintain that it's extremely dangerous. Because anything that offers you these type of possibilities is going to have negative consequences that will be equally as large.
Mm. Do we have any way of knowing, this is just a shot in the dark question, Elton, but do we have any way of knowing really what the state of the art is right now? In other words, I'm sure that if Elton T. Elliott can come on here and talk about it, our government, other governments, are way deep into it, far into it, and secretly so.
Actually, what's really fascinating about this technology is how it snuck up on everybody, or at least the possibilities of this technology. The one key thing about nanotechnology is it isn't science, it's engineering. You know, I mean, the difference is that it's engineering in the sense that, that it breaks no physical law, so we can, it's just a matter of learning how to do it, as opposed to, say, discovering a whole new scientific theory. Because of that, oftentimes it is considered, oftentimes it's simply dismissed by engineers, because after all, they deal with things that they can build.
That's right.
And to a certain extent, until recently, in the scientific community, it received the same type of dismissal. But that has changed in the 1990s. As a matter of fact, toward the end of the Bush administration, Dr. Drexler briefed the CIA, he briefed all sorts of top government agencies about this, and indeed there were several major generals that were stunned by the military implications and stunned by the fact that nobody knew anything about it. Okay, this is something where the scientists and the thinkers have really been ahead of, or in this case, Eric Drexler and people like him, theoretical engineers, have really been ahead of everybody, including, I might add, the science fiction writers.
Well, except that, of course, we have no way of knowing what's going on in secret underground labs and all
that. That's true, that's true. We can say certain things. We do know that there were, I mean, I know, for instance, the scientists at Boeing were considering stuff like this back in the early 1980s, which they called cellular automata. I know that the Japanese right now are spending $200 million a year on nanometer scale types of scientific efforts. And in the case of Germany, in Europe, I've heard that it's around $100 million a year. Outside of Tokyo in Japan, there's a 40-story tall building that is devoted to nothing but nanotech research. So I know foreign governments are doing it, and doing it almost in a crash program. And as for the United States, it looks like in this case, I think we're behind the curve.
The nano curve, huh?
Behind the nano curve. I would hope it's being done. The key thing is, I am concerned about this technology being developed secretly. I'm very concerned about this.
Exactly. Well, I would be too. And
this technology should be developed out in the open, and we should have free information exchange and what have you. I will say right now,
but it's not going to happen. I mean, that ignores all of human history, including the atomic bomb.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it does. Although there are some things that are out in the open. When Drexler and the people that first talked about nanotechnology chatted about it, they presumed that we would manipulate natural atoms. Well, engineers at AT&T have developed artificial atoms. just recently, major breakthroughs have been made in certain types of mathematical puzzles using DNA computers. You simply assign certain numbers to strands of DNA and run it through a DNA synthesizer and sequencer and come out with the answer.
Todd, that's frightening.
And you can do it a lot faster than you can say through a normal computer. At the same time, Intel has just sold to Sandia National Laboratories the first computer capable of making teraflop operations, which is a trillion calculations per second.
A trillion?
A trillion. A trillion. This has been out in the press. This has made the national news. It's been in the New York Times. They're using this to model nuclear explosions.
On
computers.
Figures. Instead of modeling a cure for cancer or the way cancer cells replicate, we've got a model. We get a computer that fast, and we're modeling nuclear explosions. And that makes my point perfectly. We're at the top of the hour. Elton, sit back, relax. You've got about 5 or 6 minutes or so, and we'll be right back to you. You're listening to Dreamland from the high desert. God, this is fascinating. We'll be right back.